When you are practicing a broad or narrow focus, be certain your breathing is deep, diaphragmatic, and rhythmic, that you have no sudden or abrupt movement. Your movement should be slow and deliberate. Number 4. Practice deep diaphragmatic breathing throughout your day. Breathe deeply and slowly 60 to 70 times per day. Consider pairing your deep breathing with daily activities. Let the phone ring at least twice before you answer it. Plan to inhale deeply on the first ring. Breathe deeply when you walk through doorways, when you apply the brakes in your car, when you sit, stand, and so on. Focus on your breathing. Note the flow of air into and out of your lungs. Number 5. Practice supportive internal dialogue. Talk to yourself as you would a good friend. Supportive conversations with yourself will both encourage and relax you. You will learn about specific techniques for self-reinforcement in the chapter titled, How to Talk to Yourself On and Off the Golf Course. Number 6. Focus on the present when you have sleep problems. We all have difficulty with sleep at one time or another. Our tendency is to awaken, look at the clock, and then mentally calculate exactly how much sleep we can get if we fall asleep right now. This tends to set off discussions with ourselves about how much sleep we have to perform well or not to feel tired. This thinking that is accelerated to the future also accelerates our nervous system, arouses us, and keeps us awake. It has the same effect on our sleep performance that mentally calculating our score during a round has on our golf performance. Set your alarm, turn the clock so you can't see the time, and become mindful. If you are concerned that your alarm might not work, set 2 alarms. If you are traveling, set your alarm and request a wake-up call. Feel your body become heavier as you sink deeper and deeper into the bed. Let your arms, shoulders, and neck drop into the bed and pillow. Feel the texture of the sheets and the softness around you. Continue this mindful focus as you practice deep, diaphragmatic breathing. Become aware of your inhalation and exhalation as you count your breaths. On-course concentration practice. What kinds of things can you do on the course to help maintain your concentration? Number 1, never add your score until the end of the round. Nothing will take you out of the present faster than becoming score conscious. You have already read what tour players say about a score focus or looking at the leaderboard. Make a conscious effort to play one shot at a time. Use your scorecard to rank each shot on a 1 to 10 scale, a 10 being the best shot you can hit. Set a goal of hitting a 10 on every shot. The Mind Under Par series scorecard provides detailed strategies for using a scorecard to develop focused, one shot at a time concentration, confidence, a memory bank of good and great shots, and an analysis of strengths and weaknesses in your game. Number 2, follow the same routine on every shot. A consistent pre-swing, in-swing, and post-swing routine cues the same internal and external behaviors on each shot and ensures that you focus only on the shot you are playing. Practice going from a broad focus as you do yardages, wind, and so on, then narrow your focus from behind the ball into your setup to your target. Number 3, stay target focused. Pick a target for every shot you're going to play and keep that target integrated through your entire routine. Maintain that target focus during your swing. Remember, LPGA Tour player and U.S. Open champion Meg Mallon says, "When I'm playing my best, I know I'm focusing right down to the leaf on the tree I'm aiming at." Number 4, never analyze mechanics. During a round, swing mechanics analysis belongs on the lesson tee. If you don't have it during the round, remember what Sam Snead said, "Dance with the one you brought." Return to the lesson tee and ask for drills to work on the changes you need to make after the round. Number 5, practice deep diaphragmatic breathing before, during, and after your round. Deep breathing will keep your nervous system arousal to a minimum and enhance your ability to purposely focus your thoughts on the shot you are playing. Number 6, practice quiet movement and mindfulness. Quieting your movement before and during practice and play will help you develop a desired rhythm and tempo that will build a foundation for peak performance. Mindfulness during this quieted movement places you in the present and minimizes distraction. Practice being non-emotional and dispassionate with regard to your performance. Accept the outcome of a shot or situation and remind yourself to return your thoughts to the present. Number 7, practice supportive, reinforcing internal dialogue. Supportive dialogue, both on and off the course, will teach you to be patient and to manage emotional and physical decay that produces mental distraction and physical arousal. Number 8, feel the swing you want to make, then repeat that feeling. Focus your thinking on a feeling of the swing you want to make as you take your practice swings. Focus your thinking on repeating that feeling as you swing. I once heard it stated that you can't think of two things at the same time. I disagree. You can feel the swing you want to make and still hold an image of the target. It takes practice, but you can do it. You are accessing two separate sensory systems simultaneously, feeling and vision. Imagery takes place in the same part of the brain as vision. Remember, none of these things turn on and off like a light switch. The more you practice them off the course, the more accessible and successful you will be during play. Develop a plan for on and off the course use of these concentration strategies using the format of the examples in the chapter titled Lift, Clean, and Place. Non-mechanical focus. Jack Nicklaus reflects on the common mistake of becoming focused on swing mechanics. If I could get inside the heads of most of the amateurs I've played with and the pro-ams, I'm certain the pictures I'd see would be mostly about club swing and ball striking. That's about as bad a mental mistake as you can make. Nicklaus began 1994 with a senior tour victory at the Mercedes Championship, and then he missed four straight cuts. His fourth missed cut was at the PGA Nestle Invitational in March 1994. He summarized his problems on the course as follows. I played really well at the Mercedes, and I suppose it was because I hadn't played any golf when I came out. I hadn't had time to think and really work on my swing. Once I started thinking about it and working on it, I couldn't do it. PGA Tour champion Johnny Miller describes a similar fate for many tour players, including himself, especially since the advent of video. It's a common problem for today's pros, even more so because just about everybody uses videotape. Video can kill. Very few guys on tour watched a tape of their swing for the first time and said, "Wow, I like my swing." Instead, a lot of them said, "Geez, I didn't know I did that." They try to change, and then problems begin. "It happened to me," everybody said. You take it back too far, and your left foot hops at impact. So there I was, trying to change my backswing. But if I had it to do again, I'd say, "Hey, it's my swing. I'm kicking butt. Who cares? My swing must be beautiful because the ball flew beautifully." Some of the most consistent golfers are guys who know very little about their swings. Billy Casper, Lanny Watkins, Arnold Palmer, Bruce Litsky, the list goes on. Johnny Miller goes on to say, "The secret of golf is not the swing. If you have an ugly swing and hit good-looking shots, you can win major championships if you trust the rest of your game and work on the mental side. The golf swing is just part of playing golf. I'm convinced that the swing isn't the reason you score well at the professional level. You score well because you're at peace. You have a shot you trust, or you just want to go out, play aggressively, and make putts. Even the best fall into the trap of occasionally focusing on swing mechanics." In 1988, Sandy Lyle won the Masters and two American PGA Tour events, plus two of the European Tour's top events, the Dunhill Masters and the Suntory World Match Play. In 1989, sources close to Lyle say that he began to question his swing mechanics. As he watched a tape of the 1987 Players' Championship, a tournament he won, he reportedly described his swing as awful. This assessment of his swing sent Lyle from one instructor to another after a lifetime of instruction from his father, Alex, an English teaching professional. He dropped to 53rd on the European Order of Merit in 1989, his lowest position since turning professional in 1977. That same year, he told European Ryder Cup captain Tony Jacklin not to pick him for the team. In 1990, he finished 175th on the American PGA Tour money list and 59th in Europe. Lyle sought the assistance of an Australian sports psychologist, Noel Blundell, who got him off swing mechanics and into targets. In 1991, he won the European Open and finished 22nd on the order of merit. In 1992, he won the Italian Open and the Volvo Masters and finished 8th on the order of merit. Bob Tway won the 1986 PGA Championship and decided he could do better. He began to work on his mechanics and slid from the top of the money list. Tway halted his slide after 5 winless years at the 1995 MCI Classic at Hilton Head. Following his win, he reflected on his struggle. In pursuit of getting better, I monkeyed with my swing and got worse. I played poorly for so long I had no confidence at all. I never knew how big confidence was until I didn't have any. Only since last year, as I got back to my natural swing as opposed to connecting the dots, have I done better. I'm just trying to climb the ladder again. No more mechanical thoughts. Just relax and be natural. I'm more of a field player than I ever thought I was. Lori Rinker Graham joined the LPGA Tour in 1982. She won LPGA Tour events in 1984 and 1986 and the JCPenney Classic team play in 1985 with her brother Larry. She began a search to improve her game, consulting some of the top instructors in the country. Her play began to gradually deteriorate. Her final stop was with Mike Adams at the PGA National Academy of Golf in Palm Beach, Florida. Mike reviewed videos of Lori's setup and swing when she was playing well. He told Lori that when she played her best, she set up a little right of her target. He said that this setup allowed her to release through the ball better. Sure enough, Lori resumed her old setup, her ball striking improved, her confidence raised, and her scores began to lower. Many of the tour players and amateurs I work with describe an in-swing focus on mechanics at the time of our first meeting. This, I believe, is a primary reason for poor performance. Many of these players had their video recorders with them on the range during every practice session. They would make a few swings, then review the video, and analyze their swings. My first request of these players was to put the video recorders away and to begin to work on drills that promote a feeling of the swing they want to make. Swing analysis belongs with a swing instructor. These players lack confidence in their swings and would go from one instructor to another. My advice? Find an instructor and stay with him or her. There's no such thing as a perfect golf swing. If this is your goal, you won't find it in this lifetime. Most of your time will be spent chasing corrections. If you want to excel, chase your success. The Mind Under Par Series scorecard provides practice strategies to get you out of focusing on corrections and into practicing success. PGA Tour player David Frost won the 1992 Westchester Classic in Rye, New York. This was Frost's first win in 2 years after having won 4 in the previous 6 years. To improve his game, he went to a well-known instructor of some of the top tour players in the world. His play quickly deteriorated. His thoughts went from playing shots to having in-swing mechanical thoughts. His comments, "I've been very mechanical with my game. I'm trying to eliminate all swing thoughts and play an average game of golf like I was 16 or 17 years old. I'm trying to neutralize my mind. That's the difficult part. It feels great, more natural and less manufactured. The guy who knows the least will probably do the best. The guy who doesn't know much doesn't have too much to think about. The better you get, the more things you change to go forward. I got too serious instead of enjoying what I had." Frost's next win came at the Canadian Open in September of 1993. Again the following week at the 1993 PGA Tour Hardy's Classic and the 1994 Cannon Greater Hartford Open. Similarly, Greg Norman described going to the same instructor as David Frost and becoming too mechanical. Norman said that once he dropped the method and began to feel as he used to, that's when he got his consistency and steadiness back. This transition back to his old swing began at the Houston Open toward the end of 1991 while working with instructor Butch Harmon. Norman says it took 10 to 12 months to get back to where he was when he was comfortable. Then he won the PGA Tour's Canadian Open in September 1992, the Miami Doral Ryder Open in March 1993, and the 1993 British Open. He finished second on the 1994 money list and led the tour in scoring average. In 1995, he finished number one on the money list and again led the tour in scoring average in just 16 events. Butch Harmon discussed his work with Norman. The first thing we did was get him back to swinging like Greg Norman. He tried a different swing that didn't work for him. It took about 6 or 7 months to get that out of there. Norman described the effects a mechanics focus had on his game. I lost the feel of what I was doing. That's because I was trying to be too mechanical instead of being basic and natural. At the end of 1990, I decided to try to get better and improve my golf swing. I should have left the golf swing alone and gone ahead and had a break and started all over working with what I've got, which had been successful for 15 or 16 years. So I tried to improve. I tried a different method, and that destroyed me. That destroyed my natural instincts and feel for the game. Watch struggling tour players. You will see them working on their mechanics during a round. Between shots, you can see them look for the position of their club during a practice swing, sometimes with an imaginary club. This, I believe, is a primary reason for the struggle. You cannot be thinking of mechanics and playing well at the same time. The tendency is for the mechanics thoughts to spill into the swing. A mechanics focus is a formula for disaster. In 1974, Nicklaus described his early years of work on his golf swing. He said he grew up in an era of Ben Hogan, and everything he saw, read, and heard indicated that Hogan had reached mechanical perfection. Nicklaus notes that he felt all he needed was time to work to develop this perfection. Nicklaus commented on his perceptions of those years. No matter how much work I did, 1 week I would have it, and the next I couldn't hit my head. This is still true today. I'm a far better golfer than when I started out on the tour 12 years ago, and I feel that I have improved to some degree each year. But that is more the result of maturity and competitive experience than of improvement in the mechanics game. Former PGA Tour champion and teacher Ken Venturi sums up the mechanics focus quite nicely. If you're hitting the ball well, don't start fiddling with your swing to make it look prettier. Otherwise, sooner or later, your shots will turn ugly. When you start freezing positions, looking in the mirror to see if you're perfect, you become tense and hinder the natural flow of your swing. Ray Floyd states, "I've had enough of that mechanical stuff, all the swing keys, the pulling and pushing. Now I let the club swing naturally." All of these examples remind me of the story of the Chinese philosopher who asked the centipede how it could walk with so many legs in such a coordinated fashion. As the centipede began to describe the mechanics of its gait, it stumbled and fell. Top golfers will tell you that they play their best golf when they have no thoughts regarding their mechanics. Why is that the case? One explanation takes us back to Wirens, Koops, and Sheehan's description of left and right brain functions. A focus on mechanics is a left brain function that interferes with performance. Another explanation is that you begin to play swing and forget the shot. Your goal is to hit the ball to a target. Focus on your targets to the exclusion of mechanics. Bobby Jones said, "Concentrating on the results of a golf shot to the absolute exclusion of all other thoughts, especially about its method, is the secret to every good shot I ever hit." Sam Snead says, "All you have to do is tell a player his hands are in a beautiful position at the top and ask him how he got them there." He says, "Any player who begins to think about his hands will begin to hit balls left, right, everywhere, but at the target." Senior tour player Chichi Rodriguez was asked what he does better now than when he played on the regular tour. His response, "I putt better. If I putted like I do now, I would have won 50 tournaments. My nerves are better. Putting is a state of mind. I have confidence that I can make the putts. Back then, I didn't. I putted okay in the early 70s. Then somebody gave me $50 to write an article on how I putt. When I tried to break it down, I couldn't figure it out, and I didn't putt worth anything for a long time." Ed Grant, a lecturer and golf enthusiast, used the following exercise to show what happens when you focus on your mechanics during the golf swing. Now, I'd like for you to do this exercise, and I'm going to present the steps. So if you need to, please shut off the tape and get a piece of paper and a pencil. Or if you're driving in your car, please be sure and come back to this, because it's really very telling. First thing I want you to do is write your name at the top of a piece of paper, okay? Just take the piece of paper, sign your name. Now, under your signature, I want you to copy your name. I don't want you to sign your name again. I want you to copy your name. I want you to look at the length of each line in each letter. Copy every curve as you see it. Don't just sign your name again. Look at each stroke of the pen and your signature as you copy your name. Now, once you've done that, that's going to take a couple of minutes because it tends to be a very slow process. Now, once you've done that, then I want you to copy your first copy again using exactly the same technique. So you'll have three signatures in a row. Not signatures, but you'll have one signature and two copies. And your third one is to copy the copy. Now, as you do this, you can stop because I'm sure you're recognizing the progressive deterioration in the quality of your signature from the first to the last. Your golf swing should be as automatic as your signature. As you begin to think your way through your swing, it's similar to copying your signature. It's also similar to driving a car for the first time. As new drivers, we had a tendency to oversteer. Our focus was on the steering wheel, the brake, the accelerator, and a very short distance beyond the front bumper. When you oversteer a golf swing, your performance will deteriorate. When you drive now, your focus is 100 to 600 feet ahead of the car. You're looking at your targets. When you steer your golf swing, your focus is on the movements of the swing, not the target. Remember, always think about the target. Don't forget the quote, stare at the target and glance at the ball. The anatomy of learning. When you trace the development of an infant's brain into its early years of life, it resembles the growth of a young tree. It continues to branch into more and more intricate patterns with age. A recent brain research shows that learning is represented in the nervous system in much the same way. That is, as learning occurs, structural changes evolve in the branching of the nervous system. These structural changes represent many repetitions of simple to complex behaviors. Neuroscientists suggest that there is a massive flourishing of neural structures from birth to about 5 years, and this is followed by a pruning of those structures until about age 20. The flourishing and pruning process involves both learning and development. Now, consider the gradual learning of any motor or mental skill. Performance is dependent upon the sequential firing of the correct circuitry. The more repetition through the circuitry, the more learning is ingrained, and the more predictable the behavior becomes. Change the conditions in which the behavior was originally learned, and you will create a new path of circuitry. Once the behavior is practiced across a variety of conditions, consistent, predictable patterns of firing will occur, and behavior becomes predictable in most conditions. How many times have you stood on the practice range during a good ball striking period and said, "I've got it"? Anyone who has played golf for any period of time has been on the practice range and concluded he has it at one time or another. He's also certain that this magic bullet is going to carry him to a higher level of performance the next time he plays. There are a multitude of reasons why you don't have it. These reasons all return to the structural, anatomical nature of learning as represented in the brain. This is why lessons that include drills and practice, which entails repetition of the desired sequence of behaviors, recall the chain links. It's why this sequence of behaviors and the repetition of those behaviors are going to be your best learning strategies for lasting change. This is why it took European and USPGA Tour player Nick Faldo 2 years to rebuild his swing. He was rebuilding the neural circuitry of the brain. It took Greg Norman 6 to 7 months to return the old neural circuitry of his former swing. This is also why you will hear most instructors say that it is easier to teach a beginner than a player of 15 years who has well-practiced bad habits. These habits have a structural representation in the brain. New circuitry must be built through repeated practice. The old learning branches just don't go away either. Research shows that these unused neural circuits appear to atrophy with age, although they seem to fire at the most inopportune times, especially under pressure. The new learning must be rehearsed repeatedly across a variety of situations before it completely overrides the old structural learning circuitry of the brain. There are no magic bullets in learning. Drills, the path to swing fix. As already noted, your nervous system branches like a growing tree as learning occurs. Your swing memory is in these branches. You're going to make corrections in your setup, in swing or post swing. You have to override old learning that resides in the neural circuitry. This neural circuitry can't be erased or changed in a day, or even 2 or 3 days. Nervous system branches can't be pruned like the trees in your yard or at your local club. Daily drills at home and on the practice range are the only way to groove new habits in the nervous system. These drills will reprogram the circuitry of your nervous system through repetition. This is true of both the mental and mechanical routines. If you consider it, it's true of every behavior we learn. You've never been able to perform a new complex motor skill at your best possible performance level after 1, 2, or even a series of lessons. It takes practice. Our tendency is to expect maximum performance after a few trials and minimum practice. Frustration follows when we don't experience the expected level of performance. You can change these undesired learned behaviors. The only way to override this old learning is through daily repetition that grooves new memory, creating new branching networks in the nervous system. Once learned and practiced in different states, the learning will generalize or transfer to other conditions, for example, from the range to the course to tournament play. I have read and heard it stated that it takes 21 days and numerous daily repetitions to change a habit. I spent the first 8 years of my psychology training in a laboratory studying behavior under various learning conditions. I have never seen a scientific study that states it takes 21 days and 60 repetitions per day to change a habit. However, I would suggest it's a good guideline. The time it takes to change a habit is going to be dependent upon learning history. That is, how complex are those branches of nerve pathways that are related to the golf swing or similar movement, like a baseball swing? And in how many different states have you practiced this swing? Once you have made the swing changes in a low arousal setting, graduated exposure to on-course situations will transfer this learning to new states. This is why the person who has a lot of experience in tournament or pressure situations is more likely to play better in those conditions than the person who doesn't. The seasoned player has learned to perform under a variety of different conditions or states. Most golfers are familiar with Byron Nelson's 1945 win streak of 11 straight PGA Tour events. Every golf magazine in 1995 had coverage of the 50th anniversary of this tremendous feat. Most people don't know that Nelson not only won 11 straight tournaments that year, he won a total of 19 tournaments and finished out of the top five only one time in 1945, with a stroke average of 68.33. Byron Nelson began recording his playing performance in a diary in 1935, although his golf career began before that year. In 1935, Nelson played 112 rounds in 31 tournaments. He recorded only 4 rounds in the 60s, 3 rounds of 69 and 1 of 68. He recorded 6 rounds of 80 or higher and 45 rounds of 75 or higher. His scoring average in 1935 was 74.06. In 1938, Nelson played in 24 tournaments and had a scoring average of 74.83. In 1942, Nelson's scoring average dropped to 71.02, and in 1944, it fell further to 69.77. Byron Nelson climbed a tall ladder. When you look at his performance over the 10 years prior to 1945, you can see his ups and downs and his gradual progress. You can also see he was poised for his 1945 streak. Every successful competitive golfer has climbed the ladder of competition. Few players experience immediate success as they step onto a new rung from junior golf to high school to college to mini tours, and finally on to the big tour. There are struggles at every rung. The tendency is for these players to lose confidence in their swing and their ability to compete. They begin to focus their concentration on their swings rather than their targets. Most of the great players in the world don't have pretty or 100% technically sound swings. However, their swings are consistent. They repeat the same mechanics on each swing. They aren't searching for the perfect swing or for every shot to be perfect. They can repeat the same swing no matter what the condition. They are not mechanically focused. In his early years, Bobby Jones was described as a great ball striker but a poor competitor. In the 1923 U.S. Open at Inwood, Jones went into the last round with a three-stroke lead until the last three holes, where he dropped four strokes to tie with Bobby Cruickshank. Jones won in a playoff. Again, in 1928, he was three strokes ahead of the field in the U.S. Open at Olympia Fields and dropped seven strokes the last 11 holes to tie with Johnny Farrell. Jones lost in a playoff. 1 year later, the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, again he was three strokes ahead of the field going into the last day. He took two sevens to drop to a tie with Al Watrous. Again, he recovered and won the playoff. With repeated experience, Jones learned to compete differently in later years. However, early in his career, any time he had a lead going into the final round, his pattern was to lose several strokes. The practice swing, a meaningless ritual? Your nervous system stores two types of memory, short-term and long-term. It takes many rehearsals of a skill, verbal or motor, to convert memory from short-term to long-term. A practice swing does two things for you. Number one, it is calling up a swing from your memory. Number two, it is providing you with a rehearsal of the ideal feeling for a shot. I see many players practicing on the range, raking and hitting one ball after another. The speed of their practice session spills into the tempo of their swing, and frustration quickly sets in. I've watched other players take a practice swing on the course during play. However, they don't pay attention to the tempo and feeling, and the practice swing seldom resembles the swing they put on the ball. The practice swing has become a meaningless ritual that is part of their routine, however, not used efficiently. Sure, it makes you feel loose and assists you in relaxing before the shot. However, do you feel the tempo? Do you experience and focus on the feeling of your total practice swing? When you play your best golf, do you take a practice swing? Do you have a picture of the swing in your mind? Let's look at another situation. You play approximately 72% of your golf game from 150 yards in. For the majority of these shots, you won't hit a full club. Do you rehearse the feeling of the swing, whether it is 55 yards or 5 yards? You probably won't have the same shot again in that round, or maybe the next two or three rounds. Your eyes feed your brain information regarding distance that transfers a feeling of movement to the large muscles. You feel the shot as you take practice swings while looking at the target. Most of you will increase the number of practice swings you take on a shot the closer you get to the green. Ideally, when you step up to the ball, your rehearsed practice swing is the swing you make. When you're able to do so, your performance is best. Why not practice feeling every shot and use your short-term memory to repeat that feeling in your full swing? Mike McGettrick, a friend and PGA teaching professional, and instructor for many LPGA and PGA Tour players, tells me he doesn't let a student hit a ball without first taking a practice swing. The next time you watch a tour event, notice how both men and women feel the distance on the green as they look at the hole. Notice that they take a practice swing outside a sand bunker before stepping in to hit their shot. They also rehearse their swing when chipping and pitching and all shots from 75 yards into the green. Anytime a player is between clubs, they feel the distance and the shot they want to hit. I recommend you begin taking a practice swing before every shot, whether you're on the practice range or during a round. Focus your concentration on the feeling of that swing. If you don't like the way it feels, take another one. Your goal should be to repeat the feeling of the practice swing as you make your swing on the ball. Mentally, maintain your target orientation as you do. You should have no thoughts of mechanics during the swing, only an image of the target and the feeling of the practice swing. The chapter on visualization will show why a feeling and even an image of the swing you want to make are two of the best pre-swing and in-swing thoughts you can have. You will see how this helps construct a performance-enhancing motor program. I would encourage you to practice feeling the same grip pressure with every shot you hit. If you increase grip pressure during putting, you will grab the putter, creating a hitting motion, and pull or push the putt. If you increase your grip pressure in the full swing, you will also likely produce a hitting motion. Both of these conditions are created by tension. Effort creates tension. Attempting to hit the ball further results in effort in your swing. You will likely find that the day's effort is working, your short game is off. The accumulated tension interferes with your feel for the short game. Your sense of feel or touch abandons you. Peak performers will tell you, when they are playing well, the feeling is effortless. Remember how effortless the best round you ever played was? Focus on that memory for the next time you tee it up with a long hitter. Harvey Pinnick, one of the greatest teachers of our time, said, "The woods are filled with long drivers." The John Daly's, Fred Couples, Davis Loves, and Jim Dents are the exceptions, of course. They are rare. They are world-class players. Remember, keep your focus on your targets effortlessly. In closing this chapter, I want you to recall what Gary Player said. Concentration takes years of practice to acquire. It's difficult to come by and easy to lose if you let up. An integral part of developing concentration, of course, is self-discipline, the kind of self-control that teaches your mind to do what you want it to do. In spite of this practice, there are many events that will steal your concentration. It is important that you have as few off-course distractions as possible if you are going to play your best. Tiger Woods shot an opening round 70 to tie for 8th place during the 1996 PGA Tour Championship. At 3 a.m. the morning of the second round, Tiger took his father to the hospital and stayed with him until later that morning. Tiger shot a 43 on the front and even on the back to record a 78 on the day, his highest score of his PGA career. Needless to say, Tiger lost his focus that day. His thoughts were with his father in a hospital a few miles from the golf course. Concentration takes practice. If you're going to heighten your ability to concentrate, I would encourage you to review the on- and off-course strategies covered in this chapter and begin a daily practice program.
This is the end of this cassette. Please proceed to the next cassette.
Chapter 4, Concentration, Keeping Your Head in Play.